Blog Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome to another episode of the Two Guys Soccer Podcast. I'm Armstead, and I am joined by Will this week again, as Mike is still away for some much-needed and deserved R&R. And so we're going to just sort of chat about a few things going on in the world football this week, and just a couple of possible predictions for what we think moving forward. But we're going to take it easy tonight. We're going to take it slow tonight. So let's go ahead and thank our sponsors, as we're brought to you always by the good people over at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle at 4844 Cordell Avenue in Bethesda, Maryland. Montgomery County's premier location for live music and sports, especially if you're into soccer and rugby, and it's a great place to go and enjoy yourself. There's also great people there. Great drinks, good food, and just a really pleasurable and enjoyable atmosphere. So if you're over in that area, drop by, say hello, tell them that the Two Guys Soccer Podcast sent you over. So, my man Will, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm a little bit disappointed because anyone in the DMV might have known that Maryland was going, the University of Maryland was going to host Arsenal for a training session today, this Monday, and about 2 hours before that training session, we got a severe thunderstorm alert, and Arsenal said they wouldn't be training today.
Dagger! What time was that supposed to start today?
Yeah.
About 3 o'clock?
It was supposed to be 6:30 p.m. Yeah. Yeah, no.
Well, you know, it's funny, after the weather this week in basically the eastern half of the United States, the only time, that's probably the best time for them to train was about 6:30 p.m. this evening. This has been the coolest day we've had in a few days. So it was actually relatively pleasant out there today. It's a shame that they couldn't get out there and have a kick about.
Yeah, it was a bit of a shame. Because also, me and a couple of friends were planning on going. We were sort of planning it last night. And then one of my friends said, apparently, it's only for Arsenal Supporters Club members, and you have to pay $25 at the gate.
Oh, that's what that was. Okay, I'm an Arsenal Supporters Club member, and I kept getting these emails for for the view training, and I was like, why? I didn't even look at it. I didn't realize it was exclusive. That's kind of cheap, though. They're going to make you pay. Well, I mean, they make you pay $25 when it's on a college campus, of all things. I mean, that's kind of bush league. They should. If you're going to have it on a college campus, you should definitely open it up to basically everybody.
I mean, if it's on a college campus, people who go to that university should be allowed to go for free.
Absolutely.
Because they were using
Absolutely.
That track. I was going to go for a track workout, and then they booked out the track, complex, which has the field in the middle.
Yeah, that's kind of an Arsenal thing to do, though. You know they have the highest ticket prices in the Premier League. And
Yeah,
so they seem to be notorious for their how much they overcharge people. And money grubbing, especially when you look at how little they choose to spend on transfers when they consider themselves a top club. So, yeah, I can't. I mean, it's disappointing, but I can't say I'm surprised.
You're not shocked at all?
No, I'm not shocked at all. Good old Stan's, you know, gonna continue to do that. I could even see him thinking, going, well, that is, you know, Ravens Redskins country, since he's primarily interested in his football team instead of really investing in his world football team. So. I can't say that it comes as a complete shock, but that's too bad. I think if you have something on a college campus, then you would want the young people there to support you. Especially when you're in a part of the world, though, where, you know, basically beyond the top five players in the world, any soccer player could walk down the street in the United States and not really be bothered. If you're not Ronaldo, you're not Messi, you know, you could pretty maybe Paul Pogba, but I could even see him being able, if he didn't dye his hair orange, I could see him walking down the streets in College Park with no problem. So it would be an opportunity for you to bring some more eyes on the game, because, you know, everybody wants to get the U.S. market.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was thinking. Obviously, I was going to break into the stadium. I wasn't going to pay the $25. Because why would you? It's only
right.
a short fence. but you know, it's a bit much to say you're having an open training, and then charge people at the gate to go in.
Yeah, well, especially when it's training. It's not a game. It's training, and you know the ticket prices for the game are pretty high. But you can get seats for, I believe, you can get seats for as low as in the like $36. You can get a seat. Granted, you're in the nosebleeds, but you're still in the stadium. You can watch the game, and you can buy a beer. You know, you can't do that at the training ground at the University of Maryland facilities. So,
absolutely not.
Yeah. You know, Arsenal, at my old school I used to work at, they would do – I'm not sure they still do, but there was about a three-year stretch where they did a summer camp there. And a buddy of mine who is a big Liverpool supporter is was working at the – just at the summer camp the school was having. And Arsenal was just basically renting the field to do their camp over here. So he said, hey, I'll try to get you like a water bottle or a ball or you know, something, maybe like a T-shirt or something. And he said that they kept their stuff under like the strictest lock and key in the whole area. Like they had like they rented a storage locker or whatever, and they had like 8 locks on it. And there was somebody who was sitting there monitoring it at all times and everything. And so now that I hear them doing this, hey, I can't say it really surprises me. I was able to get a ball, though. I was able to get a ball out of the dumpster because the side of it had ripped. So I was like, well, I'll take it. It says Arsenal on it.
It says Arsenal. Hey, someone's probably kicked it, who I know.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's funny, too, is I was on campus. I was working in the tech department, and I forgot that they were having this camp. And, you know, summertime, you wear whatever you want. I just had to be wearing an Arsenal jersey. About 14 parents and kids came up to me asking me where the camp was, all this other stuff. And because, you know, all the camp counselors looked like high school kids, a couple people thought I played for the team, you know. And I was like, you hear me talk. I sound pretty American. There's not an American in a row of that club. So, no, I don't know what you're talking about. It took me a minute.
You're that American talent that went over to.
Yeah.
You're that American talent that went over to Arsenal, right?
That's right, yes. Who clearly looks like he's over 30 years old. Yeah, definitely. So it was so funny. I went up, I was talking to a couple of their counselors afterwards, and I was like, yeah, don't worry. I didn't realize you guys were here. I'm not going to wear this anymore. I don't want to get in your way. They were really nice though about it. They were happy that I was a supporter, so that was the cool part. But it was pretty funny. If it was about 10 years earlier, everyone would have mistaken me for Thierry Henry again, like I got when I was younger. But definitely wasn't going to happen in 2017. So
maybe it would.
Yeah,
you know,
would.
Thierry Henry in 2017 playing
right.
New York Red Bulls.
That's right, who happened to be walking around a school carrying a computer and a bunch of wires. Yes, yeah, absolutely going to be running the camp at that time. Absolutely. Well, so speaking of we've been talking about Arsenal, we actually just had the Manchester City Liverpool final in Egypt this past week with Senegal and Algeria catching that final. Were you able to watch that game?
I was able to watch it, and I think one of the things that the commentator of the game I was watching said really resonated with me. They said that was a game that definitely didn't need an early goal.
Yeah.
And after that first goal went in, that was quite honestly a fluke.
Yeah.
That game just died.
Absolutely.
It died on its feet, and it was just, it was painful to watch.
Yeah, I made it through about 35 minutes, and I will, to be totally honest, I actually fell asleep. So I was at my house, and it was quiet, and I was sitting in my room, and I had the game on. I saw the early goal, and I immediately cringed because I had that same worry. I said, you know, with the offense that Senegal is able to probably put on, I could see Algeria going, we got one. Let's just keep them from scoring and park the bus, in a sense. And I didn't make it through the game. Yeah, dozed off. So went back and I tried to read. I saw some highlights on it. There, Senegal didn't really have any. They had a couple of good shots, but, you know, it was, yeah, it was a downright snoozer. It was not a final that you would hope to see, especially after, I thought it was a good tournament. You know, you had some exciting games. You had your Cinderella story. You had star power, and you had star power in the final. And it's a shame that happened, that fluky early goal happened. It would have been great to have that game actually build up and have them go back and forth for about 40 minutes in a way before someone gets one in, or actually have a good solid offensive build up or a nice set of passing or a good counterattack to get that goal in. But because a 1-0 game doesn't mean it's a boring game, but for that particular game, a 1-0 game was a very, very boring game. So I have to agree with the commentators.
I mean,
that one.
Yeah, I remember a 0-0 game between Liverpool and Arsenal a couple seasons ago being probably the most interesting game I'd watched in the Premier League that season.
I remember that game.
So,
yeah,
I mean,
it was a great game. It's a great game. It's an early in the season game. It's a great game.
Yeah, so I mean, a low scoring game doesn't necessarily preclude a bad game, but that game, I feel as though even if Algeria had scored in the 35th minute, say, instead of the second, then that game would have been a lot better.
I agree.
But since they scored in the second, like, they just had no time to get their attacking rhythm going. And I can't remember Mahrez doing anything but maybe one shot in the second half. Which, like,
well,
relieved a bit of pressure.
Right.
But, I mean,
well, I think a telling issue with the game was, if you watched, I always, even when I watch a full final, I always go back to watch the highlights. I see what different highlight packages are out there, because there's always, you know, in different languages and different countries to put out the highlight package. And the time for these were really short. And normally you get a highlight package of a game, it'll be about 10 minutes, maybe 10 to 12 minutes. And most of these for this game were about 3 to 5 minutes. And of those 3 to 5 minutes, a lot of it was taken up with the trophy presentation as well as the game introduction.
The walkout.
Walkout. So there really wasn't much to highlight. So, and even looking at statistically speaking, you're looking at a total of 201 passes for Algeria. That's a very, very low number of possession. But even with Senegal had, you know, the lion's share of possession, they had 324 passes. That's also a little low. Pass accuracy was way down. Algeria had a 55% pass accuracy, which lets you know they were playing boom ball, and they were just basically just trying to keep the ball out of the area, and they weren't concerned about possession. And they only had two shots and one shot on goal for the winning side. I think that tells you what their game plan was after that early fluke goal went in. And it's a shame, because it I'm not saying you should always play to win, of course, play to win. I wish Senegal could have responded and gotten a goal in the first half, because that would have opened up the game a bit more in the second half. But unfortunately they didn't, and that led to a kind of a dud of a final. And, you know, you hear coaches say, you know, you play, once you get to the final, you play to win. Like, you're not playing for any, you know, you're not trying to do anything fancy. You're not trying to do anything, you know, you're basically playing not to lose. And I get that anxiety before finals, and, you know, you hope it's not a letdown. And even last year, when after Mo Salah was injured early in the Champions League final. You just knew, like, oh, you knew it wasn't going to be that great of a game, and it wasn't after that happened. And so it's I get it, because you know if my team was there and my team was the one that was winning, I wouldn't mind so much. But it's frustrating as a fan to know that that can be the case of a final. I mean, I can even go back to the 94 World Cup final with Brazil versus Italy. That was a boring game. Italy had played exciting soccer that whole tournament, and so had Brazil. And then even the 06 final with France and Italy, if it wasn't for the headbutt, that was a boring game too. So you know, I guess it is what it is. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but agree with you about finals. The Algerian manager must have been taking notes on what Mourinho said about you don't play a final, you win a final.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That must have been what Klopp did as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what Klopp did as well in this most recent Champions League final. Again, while you're going back to the highlight packages, I think they must have been only about 8 minutes long, and 2 minutes of those were presenting the teams, 2 minutes of showing the first and second goal, and then you got 2 minutes of trophy presentation and 2 minutes of Jordan Henderson crying with his father.
absolutely.
But I mean, you know, that Champions League final, I was having a great time because my team was winning.
Right.
But I'm certain if I was a Tottenham fan, I would have been cursing out the Liverpool team, like, hey, I'm playing football, like, they aren't doing it properly.
Right.
And that's kind of what I was doing, because I was rooting for Senegal. I wanted Sadio Mane to win an international trophy.
Yeah.
And because he also had speaking of Sadio Mane, I'll come back to this in a minute, but, you know, I wanted him to win because he's a Liverpool player.
Yeah.
But one thing that he did say that I found really interesting is the Africa Cup of Nations isn't considered in the international world in the same light as the European Cup or the Copa América.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that. I was just thinking, he's completely right about that. And I'm just wondering why. I mean, it's, by and large, I'd say it's more competitive than the Copa América. I would say that. I'd say it's less competitive than the European Cup, but I think that it's more competitive than the Copa America.
Yeah.
And his point about it not being in the same consideration for the Ballon d'Or was just sort of telling. And I'm thinking that talks back to what we were talking about last week in the rise of African football.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to see what will happen with this tournament and great players that are coming out of Africa in the next few years.
Yeah, that's a really good point. From the standpoint of qualification for the tournament, the schedule and the talent and the teams that actually have a real legitimate shot at winning, yeah, that tournament's pretty competitive. And you know, you're looking at Copa America. And outside of, you know, like, let's take Chile. Chile won the two previous Copa Americas before this most recent one. But that was their first one in, I think, like, in the 99 years. They hadn't won one. So you're looking at outside of Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay, those three teams are pretty much competing every time for the Copa America. And you know that you're going to have Argentina or Brazil is going to be in one of those finals. So from a competitive nature, yeah, in the AFCON, you can see a wide variety of teams finaling. And I think that builds that's good for the excitement. But even to Mane's point, it's still third though. When you think about it, it's better than the Asian Cup. It's way better than the CONCACAF Cup. I mean, they don't really stack up at all. So you're looking at after the Copa America and the Euro, this is the third tournament for an international stake, and maybe the fourth tournament if you want to include the World Cup in there. But I think they have a firm grip on that, and that's not going to go anywhere. And if anything, if they continue to have better tournaments, and you know, take the final aside, if they continue to have strong tournaments, then you know, you could totally see that tournament totally picking up a notch. Because also with the time frame, I mean, soccer is based out of Europe. We all know that. It's Europe is the center of soccer. But time wise, Africa is on the same time scale as Europe. So the Europeans are going to have access to those games at the same time they have access to their games and their own Euro tournaments as well. And it looks like the African Cup of Nations is going to make sure that they're not on the same year as the European Cup. So, you know, this is a positive thing going on here, where at least to Monty's point, that yes, it's not a big deal yet. From his personal experiences, I think it can get there, and it can get there relatively soon. I think that's what I'm trying to say. Because I was rooting for Mane. I was. He's been a world class player over a number of years now, and I think this is going to continue. He's only 27, so he still has a lot of years left in him. And with his size and with his build and with his motor and with his durability, I mean, you know, he's going to be I just see him being on the Premier League team of the season for many years to come.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, even before he came to Liverpool, he was doing mm-hmm. great things.
He was.
He currently holds the fastest hat trick in the Premier League in like 2 minutes and 12 seconds. So that's already one of those stats that will go down in down in the Premier League annals, because I can't see anyone going faster than that.
No.
But mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I've always really enjoyed Sadio Mane. I know mm-hmm. a few Liverpool fans who haven't. I won't name names, but one of my friends called Tom. he doesn't enjoy the way that Sadio Mane plays because he thinks he's a bit selfish, but I'm thinking that he's just a world-class player who's taking mm-hmm. his chances.
Mm-hmm.
And, mm-hmm. you know, like any world-class yep. player, they're going to miss chances.
Right, right.
And you don't talk about the chances they miss as much as you talk about the chances they make. And mm-hmm. You being an Arsenal supporter, you've obviously noticed that Sadio Mane likes to score against you.
Yes, very, very much so. Remember, it was an opening game. It was Sadio Mane's first game for Liverpool, and I was at the LFC DC club with my friend who the guy who works at my old school is the Liverpool supporter, and yeah, that was first game. He had a great individual play, turned, cut inside, shot the ball with his right, put the ball right in, and I just saw the Liverpool fans all look around and they all just said, this guy's going to be a good player for us. And, you know, for Mane, I can recall a couple of times where watching a Liverpool match where he took a shot when he shouldn't have, probably should have passed when the opportunity presented itself and he didn't. You know, yeah. But, you know, the problem with these kinds of players with this level of talent is they can't make that mistake more than once or twice before they get pegged as being a selfish player. And,
yeah.
You can point out numerous times this past year where he was coming down the wing. He set up his teammates, gave a good cross, or you know, laid it off for a trailing player to set something else up. Or the way he moves so well without the ball that I think it's very easy for us as fans to do that to a player, to a world class player, and go, you know, well, he's just selfish. That's why we didn't win. And I can't remember the game. There was one game where Liverpool drew. I think it was last year, actually, where they should have won that game. They ended up drawing, and I think it kind of set them back a ways from winning the Premier League. I can't remember the game. I just remember, I think it was Firmino was wide open in the middle, and Mane shot the ball. And I think the fact that Mane didn't look like he was sorry, he didn't really seem contrite in his mistake. That could easily have, I could easily see that rubbing a lot of fans the wrong way. But I support the player. I think he's definitely a world talent.
Yeah, so do I. And I mean, I don't think there's any player currently playing for Liverpool that could be accused of being selfish over the team.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't think of a single one.
Mm-hmm.
Off the top of my head, the last one mm-hmm. I could think of was Felipe Coutinho, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. he's not at Liverpool anymore.
no, and soon not to be at Barcelona anymore either.
He might be back at Liverpool, according to all the rumors.
Yeah, exactly.
I can't really see that happening.
No, I can't see I don't know if there'd be a spot for him. I mean, do they want him back? You know, I don't know.
I don't think there is a spot for him.
Yeah.
I mean,
speaking of transfers, though, what do you think about this whole situation with Gareth Bale and Real Madrid? And with Zidane coming out saying basically, we hope he leaves soon, and we're working on his departure right now, and this is the last game he's going to play for Real Madrid before there really is any sort of, you know, there really isn't any specific team that claims to be making a move for him. But, you know, this is just it. This is you got to appreciate the honesty, but this is just a little odd coming from a coach of Zidane's caliber.
I mean, I don't really understand that statement. I'm obviously not a world-class manager like Zidane.
Yeah.
So I can't get in his head, but I just sort of think, would Jurgen Klopp ever say that about a player?
Yeah.
Or would the Liverpool manager ever say that about a player? And I just can't see that happening at all. I mean,
but you never even heard Mourinho say something like that. Mourinho never said anything like that about a player. Even when he was disappointed, he would just talk about how he had to get back into training and earn his spot or something like that.
Yeah, and I can't really see the reason behind that. I know that Gareth Bale is an expensive player, but, you know, he is a really important player in the recent history of Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever he's been fit and in a team that is doing anything, he's been contributing to that team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not so certain about this season. My friends that supported Real Madrid have suddenly become Juventus supporters. So I can't really speak to that. But I think that he's been a great sort of player for Real Madrid. And he's grown and matured in that team, and he's done a lot for them. So to be said, sort of kicked to the curb like that by a manager who's come back after leaving,
mm-hmm.
I think that's a bit harsh.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he scored over 100 goals for Real Madrid, and he's won four Champions Leagues, I believe, and a league title since he's been on the club. He scored important goals for the team. He's been a starter, or he's coming off the bench. And I'm just – you got to wonder, does this have a lot to do with just the fact that he hasn't really, I guess, bought into the culture of Spain, and he never learned to speak Spanish. And, you know, they said all he does is really play golf. He hasn't really become friends with anybody on the squad. And this is all speculation. We don't know. We're not in the locker room. But a lot of the Real Madrid fans – seem to have this sort of vendetta against him because he didn't try to become Spanish in a way, but all that just seems like a whole lot of chatter that doesn't really carry a whole lot of weight, especially when you consider the success they've had since he's been on the club. So, I'm just wondering if, you know, they're just trying to dump him because they want Pogba and they know they can't pay for Pogba without getting rid of Gareth Bale. I mean, that's the only thing I'm really thinking of, because, you know, I don't really hear a team that's out there clamoring to try and sign him. That's the reason why I'm kind of like, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. Manchester United just signed Harry Maguire. They don't have any money. They don't have Gareth Bale money right now. So where's he going to go? I mean, there was even a rumor on Bleacher Report today that Gareth Bale's going to go to China for $1 million a week. So, and you know what? It's totally in the realm of possibility. Who knows? So I don't know. I agree with you. It seems out of the ordinary, and it seems a bit misguided. So, I don't really know what to make of that. But now they're talking about potentially doing a swap for Neymar, a Neymar Bale swap. But I don't know, would PSG swap Neymar for a guy on the wrong side of 30? I don't know.
I mean, you know, as much as I'm going to say, like, it was wrong of Zidane to say, come out and say, you know, Gareth Bale needs to leave this club, we're working on making him leave this club, I don't know any brilliant team that would be clamoring to sign someone, as you said, who was on the wrong side of 30 mm-hmm. and is highly injury prone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I can't see any big team clamoring to sign him other than for shirt sales.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, and these rumors that fly around about, Bale swapping for Neymar. I don't think that Neymar is going to go to Real Madrid.
No, I don't either.
I just don't think I think that's just a sort of a silly transfer that just doesn't happen. I don't think you are a world-class player anymore and you play for Barcelona and Real Madrid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's just a non-starter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I think that, you know, if Gareth Bale wants to buy out his contract and sign for Liverpool as a backup winger, I'd be happy with that.
Yeah. You know what this stinks of, though? Something like West Ham. You know?
What, maybe he was 99 strikers.
Yeah. If he was like 32, I could totally see him playing for West Ham. You know, they could spend maybe 30 million. You know, he'll go over there. He'll probably fire up the support base. They'll be like, oh, we got Gareth Bale, and then he'll probably get hurt halfway through the year, and then not really play too much anymore. But I don't know. For some reason, I just got a whiff of that. I was like, I could totally see him playing for West Ham.
You know, I would be quite happy with that. That would be really funny. I'd love that.
That would be funny.
Then they have something to sing about blowing bubbles for.
Yeah. Oh, exactly. They'd sell some jerseys, though. I'll tell you that. They'll sell a bunch of jerseys.
Yeah. They would get some American fans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I got a neighbor who supports West Ham, and they were in New York for a summer holiday a couple of years ago, and he saw them and he went up and talked to them, and they asked him to take pictures with them because they were so shocked they had fans in the United States.
Yeah. I mean, my friend started supporting West Ham because there was a defender who played for them a few years ago named James Collins,
mm-hmm.
I think. And the only reason my friend supported West Ham was because of this defender. And he was like, he just looks like a big baby leprechaun. And so that's how he picked his team in England. He was like, I'm supporting West Ham because they have a defender that looks like a baby leprechaun, a massive baby leprechaun.
Oh, that's great. That's great. You know what? West Ham's like, great, we'll support it. Buy a jersey.
Yeah.
All right. Oh. All right. That's pretty funny. Well, we're about at the halfway point. Let's go ahead and just give another shout out to our sponsor at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle at 4844 Cordell Avenue, Montgomery County's premier location. For live sports and music, if you're in the area, please give them a shout. So currently now we're in kind of the dead zone where we're just basically watching the transfer window, but considering that the transfer window in Spain doesn't close until September 2nd, and I believe the Premier League, they're closing their transfer window before the beginning of the season, but they still have a couple of weeks left for that. So the only thing we have to really go on outside of MLS is the International Champions Cup. And so far, the games have been rather, there's been a lot of goals scored in these games. You know, we've had Arsenal, Bayern Munich with 2-1, and then, you know, we had Bayern Munich over Real Madrid 3-1, Arsenal over Fiorentina 3-0, and then Tottenham and Juventus went 3-2 yesterday. So got a couple of games tomorrow with Real Madrid versus Arsenal. That'll be locally here at one of the worst stadiums ever, and that's FedEx Field. And we also have Bayern Munich playing against Milan and Guadalajara against Atletico Madrid tomorrow. But we talked about this briefly last week and the effectiveness of it. And I was going to go to the Arsenal game until relatively recently. And I was like, well, why am I not? I'm not going. I just don't feel like it. For some reason, I don't get excited to see, you know, the club I support in my backyard just for the sake of seeing them. And I just don't really want to pay $100. I don't know. I'm just, I don't know why. I should be. I feel like I should be more excited about it, but I don't know. I think that it's just not. I think because we're exposed to so much now on television and we have access to so much more, that these games have really started to lose their luster. So I don't know. What do you think about these games?
Well, I mean, I'm just going to put it this way. Arsenal is currently winning the International Champions Cup, and you aren't even putting it in my face. So I think that that is quite telling.
Mm-hmm.
But these preseason games in America, they're really just a runabout for the senior players so that
mm-hmm.
they have a chance to stretch their legs and
mm-hmm.
like get some passes going.
Mm-hmm.
And then get subbed off in all 11 changes, and then
mm-hmm.
work with some youth players.
Yeah.
And you know, I've watched some of these games on like on a stream online, and
mm-hmm.
it's just kind of dull.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem as though the players are really that into the game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're preseason friendlies. I mean, I know it's called the International Champions Cup, but you're never going to see a team put up the ICC trophy in their trophy cabinet, are you?
No, you're not.
I mean, maybe Tottenham would, but
yeah, I was going to say yes, Tottenham would. Yeah, but you know, Atletico and Milan haven't even played yet. They've yet to even play a game, so. Yeah, I agree. And I did enjoy it when I think on Wednesday Marseille is playing against DC United. And I would actually rather go watch that than watch Arsenal versus Real Madrid here for a preseason game with two clubs that are both in preseason form that are basically just out there going, whatever you do, don't hurt one of my guys. And you know, get a good sweat going, and then thank you very much. But it just reeks of a money grab. I mean, it really does. It's a money grab, which I'm not going to fault the team for that. I understand that. But I think it was when Real Madrid came and played DC United, and this was 10 years ago. I went to that, but that was fun because it was the local team playing against the international giants. Of a club, you know, big club. So Real Madrid scores, but then DC tied it up. It was 1-1. And it was like for a while there, it was fun. It was exciting. Like our little minnow team scored a goal and they tied it. And then, of course, Real Madrid scored like three more goals in the second half or something. But it was cool to see that type of dynamic where you had a lot of course, everybody who had a Real Madrid shirt was there, but you had a strong contingency of DC United supporters there. I actually went out in my DC United gear that game to watch that game, but that was fun. Whereas this doesn't really strike me as something that's fun. This strikes me as exactly what you were saying. It's a chance for the senior players to get a sweat going and have a kickabout before the season begins. But also, if there was a tournament that occurred, like, let's say you had players that played in the Copa America or players that played in the African Cup of Nations. They're not there because they haven't had their holiday yet. And, you know, this is a long season. I mean, you're looking at Sadio Mane. He really hasn't had a break since, what? I think he's had like 13 months
since,
break.
August
really
last year.
Yeah. And, but even, after
even
the
August,
World
he wasn't
World
really
Cup,
on break.
He wasn't really on a break. Yeah. So, you know, it's almost like I also don't really think they should be here playing this tournament anyway, because you got to keep these guys a break. Jurgen Klopp is not happy about the schedule. He's not happy about it. And you're seeing how saturated everything has become. I believe that Liverpool's playing in 7 different cups this year. And
mean, that depends on the FIFA Club World Cup and see if that actually is happening. Liverpool
yeah.
actually still hasn't been informed if they're playing in that.
Jeez. And then if they are, there's also restrictions on can he send like reserve team squad? Does he have to send first team squad players? Because, you know, you don't want to send your first team squad to play in the International Cup against some team in Qatar on a Tuesday. You know, you don't want to have to do that, especially And then, of course, they were talking about some of these games taking place in December. And I believe December to January, that's one of the most saturated times of the Premier League schedule. So you're having
even more
games.
It's designed to be the most saturated time.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So
it's kind of just an odd sort of thing to have happen. You know, you win the Champions League and you expect to be rewarded, and then you get put in the Club World Cup, which, you know, great. It's a great sort of idea, but it's not executed very well because, I mean, what team is going to take it seriously if they play in a European league where they have a game on Monday, they have to play in the Club World Cup on Thursday, then they have a game on Saturday, and then they have another game on Tuesday. Why would you take the game on Thursday seriously if it doesn't count for anything apart from a trophy that no one really cares about?
Right, right. Well, Real Madrid seems to like winning it, but it seems like they just happen to coast their way there because, you know, the teams they're playing against are, you know, Kashima Antlers in Japan, you know, so it's not necessarily a murderer's row of teams. So, but it lets you, but it's also, are you going to put that trophy in your trophy case, or is it going to be, you know, framed in the bathroom somewhere?
Sure. And I mean, it's just a recipe for injury, just like, I don't know if you saw this in the Liverpool-Sevilla game, the kind of just disgraceful challenge on the 17-year-old Larucci, who plays for Liverpool. So this is a 17-year-old left back who's, you know, come out to America to have a great time, play for Liverpool.
Yeah.
So this is one of the things that's really great about these tournaments. Like 17-year-olds can play in them, and they can show up and they can do good things, because that's what Larucci has been doing all preseason. And the Sevilla midfielder Magnon, I don't know their name.
Yeah, I don't know his name.
There was a Sevilla player down, and Larucci was sort of just dribbling up the field, as you're allowed to do. You don't have to stop the player sitting down in the middle of the field.
No.
Yeah, you don't have to. And he just comes up behind Larucci and he kicks his leg out from under him, and Larucci leaves the game on a stretch, leaves the stadium on crutches, and that's quite possibly, you know, the end of that, of Larucci's possibility of playing for Liverpool. Because Trent Alexander-Arnold actually got started in preseason a few years ago, and then he came on as a substitute, and then he impressed. And I could have seen that happening for Larucci, because he looked very similar to what Trent did. I mean, I'm not going to say he would have done, but it's just sort of, you know, but going back to what you're saying, preseason friendlies are supposed to be don't injure the other team, and then you've got stuff like that going on.
Right, right. And you got, you know, some of these players are knuckleheads. I mean, they really are. Some of them are just real knuckleheads, and they can't separate the competitiveness when you're in a preseason friendly like this. And they do dumb things to children. And that's kind of one of the things over here in the United States that we may not really fully grasp is how young some of these players are in the top flight leagues around the world. You know, you're not going to get a 17-year-old or an 18-year-old who's going to get significant playing time in the NBA. It's just not going to happen. There's the occasional superstar, but for the most part, that doesn't happen. You know, it's definitely not going to happen in American football. And in baseball, you get the, you know, sometimes some of them are 19, but, you know, some of the ones that come from Central America, they say they're 19, but they may not be 19. So I don't want to say disgraceful, but it's almost like you got to think about it a bit more. And I know we're kind of getting off topic here, but that's just not something that I agree with, but it's just not wise. This is a child. and they always say, you know, it's a child playing a man's game. Yeah, true, but I can't say you can look, think of some of the players that pick Phil Foden for Manchester City when he first started getting on the field. I was worried watching him play because he was tiny. And he's out there going elbow to elbow with some with grown men who, you know, who've grown into their man bodies a bit. And I would hate to see someone who's just trying to get their spot in the team, trying to make their mark, get taken out like that. But that's sad. And you would hope that definitely shouldn't happen in a preseason friendly like this International Champions Cup that we're seeing right now. Which, yeah, Arsenal's winning, but again, I doubt they're going to put that trophy in the trophy case, but they'll lose. It's Arsenal. What do you expect?
Yeah. I mean, it's like that tackle, had it happened in the Premier League, he would have been banned for several, probably at least a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, because it was straight up just an assault on the field. It reminded me of Roy Keane going up and just going in against going up against people who'd injured him in the past. And
yeah,
I thought, you know, I always hate to see an injury in a game. Like,
yeah, me too.
You know, yeah, and sure, maybe if Kevin De Bruyne gets injured, Liverpool has a better chance at winning the Premier League. But at the same time, you don't want Kevin De Bruyne to get injured because, you know, he's really fun to watch.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely.
And, you know, there are some players out there that do go out there to hurt other people. To see that happen during the league is bad, and like, but it's one thing because, you know, maybe you're being tactical about it, and that's
yeah.
just wrong.
But yeah,
see
but
it happened during
can
a preseason friendly.
Kind of understand it a little bit, though. Yeah.
See it happened during a preseason friendly. That's just you can't ever justify it.
No, you can't. You can't justify it at all, no. Well, we're gonna kind of wind down here in a little bit, but are you planning at all about watching the U.S. Championships and track that are coming on later this week? Now that I have you on the show a little bit,
the U.S. Championships, I might be. There's one thing about the U.S. track team that I just do not like Justin Gatlin at all. And, you know, that's mostly because of his whole being banned three times for drug abuse. So I just can't really ever get behind him. But I think I might be looking into that. You know, the U.S. sprints are coming back into their own. That might be an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, I was a bit upset that Lyles isn't going to run the 100, even though he's run a 9.86 this year. I am not a fan of Justin Gatlin either. I was really kind of annoyed after Usain Bolt retired, while all the American media were saying that it was like the passing of the torch to Gatlin, and Gatlin said, like, you know, I'm 4 years older than Usain Bolt is, right? And I was like, yeah, but can we stop, please? And I don't, you know, Kim Collins was running 9.9s at 41 years old, but he never had any sort of suspensions that I'm aware of. Whereas Gatlin, who's still running 9.8s, and you know, to say it's not suspect is really, I think, is really, really nearsighted. And I'm just concerned that he's always going to be tainted. And I just don't like him being the face of U.S. sprinting right now. I'm really waiting for one of these young guys to step up, and hopefully it'll be Lyles very, very soon. Which is one reason why I really wanted him to make sure he was running the 100. But, you know, we'll see. I think it'll be exciting. I'm definitely going to tune in. I want to see what they look like going into the World Championships. And maybe you and I could do a one-off World Championships show in a couple of months when they head down to Qatar. What do you think about that?
No, and I think I could – I think that could fit into my schedule.
Yeah.
You know, might have to really re-catch up on it, because ever since I got injured, I've sort of let myself run lax.
I still
don't even know if, because, you know, I always used to keep up with the 800 meters. And, you know, we were talking last week about athletes who'd have made great footballers had they tried a different career. David Rudisha, I think, probably would have made one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a 44.5 for the 400.
Yeah.
140.91 world record for the 800. You know, and he's got the legs on him. 6'3".
Yeah. 6'3", too. Yeah.
You know.
Imagine, okay, it's funny.
You know.
Always thing that concerns me, though, about that particular person is, what if he was actually more of a Christian Benteke? You know what I mean? 6'3", you know, God-given body, you know, great speed, and just can't seem to put the ball in the net to save his life.
I mean, that would not surprise me whatsoever about any track athlete who joined a football team.
Yep.
But I saw recently... Liverpool was in Boston, and there was a video that the Liverpool YouTube channel put up about meeting an NBA player. I can't remember his name for the life of me right now. I'm looking it up now. But they put up a video about meeting this NBA player, and it was Virgil van Dijk meeting this NBA player.
Yeah, he met Taco Fall.
Taco Fall, yeah.
Yeah, he's
and
a rookie.
He just looks like a child. the biggest player in the Premier League just looks like a child next to this absolute mountain of a man. And in that video, Jurgen Klopp also meets Taco, and he's like, oh, finally, a striker.
Well, have you seen Taco play basketball?
No, I haven't.
Well, okay. Most guys who are 7'6" move like they're 7'6". You know, they lumber up and down the court. They're not very graceful. You know, they're really kind of tight. He moves surprisingly fluidly, and his touch around the basket isn't bad. But his arms, he actually has an 8'2" wingspan. And he goes up to dunk the ball, and he dunks it. But before he takes his hand out of the rim, his feet are touching the ground again. He's that long. It's ridiculous how tall this guy is. And if there's anybody who I could see actually being that big that could potentially play football, it would be Taco Fall. And he's not super skinny. You know, he's kind of thick. He's got a little bit of mass on him. I'm looking at the photo now. That is actually, like, Klopp is like 6'5". And that is amazing. That is amazing. Yeah,
I mean,
that's funny.
You know,
that's
talking really basketball funny. Players, they could make some great goalkeepers.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Hakeem Olajuwon was a goalkeeper in Nigeria before he picked up basketball at 7 feet tall. He was gonna be a professional goalkeeper, but he ended up switching to basketball because I think he had some trouble getting to the low shots. They were just a little hard for him to get to, being that tall. But he was a ridiculous athlete. If anybody could have done that 7 feet, he could have, absolutely. And that's just what I heard. I mean, somebody probably just saw him and said, you should play basketball, you're tall, and see, it worked out really well for him. But yeah, that's crazy. That would be funny. I can't get over the size difference of these two. This is so funny. He goes up to his shoulder.
Yeah.
Like, my wife goes up to my shoulder.
Jurgen Klopp is a big man, and
yeah,
up to his shoulder. But, you know, my dream, you see, a few years ago, it might have been last year, when LeBron James left the Cavaliers, I was sort of chatting with my family about, oh, maybe LeBron James will go and play for Liverpool as a goalkeeper. because... you may not know this, but LeBron James actually owns about 5% of the shares of Liverpool.
Yep. Absolutely,
he's a big
yep.
Liverpool fan, so
mm-hmm.
I kept on making the joke, oh, he should go play as a goalkeeper for Liverpool.
Well, he talked about that when he first bought in. He went to a game, and he came back, and he was saying that, like, there's no atmosphere in American sports that can compare to what it's like to go to one of these games overseas. He's like, you don't know what a sporting event is like until you've been to, you know, like a Liverpool game or something like that. He just said it was an unbelievable experience. And which is what he said, that was the big reason why he was like, cause he'd heard about it. It was a big reason why he got into it and loves to go out to games often. You're actually seeing a lot of American basketball players getting more into soccer. Yeah, James Harden rocking some Arsenal gear recently. Apparently he's been to a couple of games. So that'd be pretty cool to see. It'd be pretty cool to see. And, you know, at any time you can get that crossover, maybe you get some more American athletes that'll be interested in playing. Because I'd love to see some of our great athletes decide to stick with soccer a bit longer so we could actually maybe compete on the international stage without just basically playing to trying not to drown. That would be nice to see.
You know, I think it might happen in my lifetime, maybe.
Yeah, it might happen, maybe. Yeah. I mean, not mine, though. But well, why don't we go ahead and wrap this up. Yeah. Any parting words, anything you want to share, anything you're looking forward to in the coming weeks, anything we should have on our radars about as far as the beautiful game is concerned?
You know, apart from not taking preseason friendlies seriously and, you know, not taking the Community Shield as any sort of indication of what's to come this season, I've not got really much to say.
I think that's great advice for all of us, is to not take these preseason friendlies too seriously and to also not – I mean, I'm just waiting for Arsenal Twitter to explode with the fact that they're actually winning the International Champions Cup and say that means something. I think the only thing they're excited about now is the fact that we've got a couple of loan deals that Tottenham was trying to get and Arsenal was able to get them first. So, you know, at least we got a win there. But
you beat him to the post.
Yeah, exactly. We get to pay him before they do. That's exciting. We'll just give one final shout out to our sponsor at Flanagan's Harp and Fiddle, 4844 Cornell Avenue. Thanks again for keeping us on the airwaves. Want to give a big thanks to producer Paul for keeping the show going, even on these sort of quiet and slow months. And a big special thanks to you, Will, for coming on with me. I've had a really good time chatting with you this week and last week about soccer, and we snuck in a little bit of track, so thanks to you. And that'll be it for this week. So everybody in the United States, I hope you all made it through that heat wave. Stay cool. We're going to have we're blessed with some real beautiful weather this week, and so hopefully you can get out and get some air and get some exercise. And then, you know, get ready to hunker down, because in a couple of weeks we have the best league in the world, the Premier League, starting up. So I think at this point we're considering possibly taking next week off, but you'll see us. If we're on, we'll pop up. We'll be back in your airwaves. So for Will, I'm Stead. Also for Mike and for producer Paul, this has been the Two Guys Soccer Show. Have a great evening, everyone, and we will see you soon. Good night.
Good night.